Welcome to Accelerate Your Business Growth,
where we're exploring all sorts of business topics. Experts from around the world join me, your host, Diane Helbig, for a conversation where they share their expertise with all of you. Take what you need when you need it. Featured on Inc.com, Forbes, and MSNBC's Your Business, this podcast is recognized as one of the best podcasts for small business, sales, leadership, social media, and more. When it comes to business, Accelerate Your Business Growth has got it covered. And now on with the show. My guest today is Ryan Gorel. Ryan is the founder of G-Spire Group, a professional services firm that provides fractional corporate development services to companies who desire to grow through mergers and acquisitions. He's a certified merger and acquisition professional, and throughout his career has helped hundreds of companies in various roles that was focused on providing advisory and consultative services. He brings a business owner perspective to his service offering as a partner of a business himself. Thanks so much for joining me today, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thrilled to have you here. So I'm wondering if you would explain to the listeners what you mean by corporate development.
Sure. You know, corporate development, even as few years as 2 to 3 years, I didn't know what it was. But in the development of this business plan, in my research, I came across the term corporate development. And it really fit with what I was doing, even though it's somewhat of an oxymoron when dealing with smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. That's not a term that is readily thrown around, but as part of this business, I'm taking it upon myself to just try to bring clarity on what that function is. And corporate development really is a function that most bigger companies have. They have entire departments that are solely responsible for helping that company go out and source and close on mergers and acquisitions on behalf of the company. And these are larger companies that are doing a lot of transactions, so they can afford the resources for an entire department. And in my work over my career is helping small businesses grow through acquisitions. I noticed that there's no one really helping, business owners with this transaction or with this growth plan. And I paired the two and said, well, why can't we bring this function of corporate development to smaller businesses and help them essentially do the same thing? Have someone go out and help them grow through acquisitions. And, with smaller businesses not having a ton of resources for entire departments, that was the genesis of creating a fractional executive business model to be able to help them.
Such a great idea, because you're so right. They if a small company decides it wants to grow through acquisition or through merger, it doesn't necessarily have the bandwidth, as you say, right? It doesn't have the people, it doesn't have the ability. So I would imagine that would be so much harder to do successfully, because there's that lack of knowledge, about what to watch out for, what to pay attention to, and all of those things, and really time consuming.
Exactly. The two things that, I typically find myself solving for is business owners that I'm working with typically are owner operators, really, really good operators. And really good operators tend to be in their business, working with their employees, working with their customers, putting out fires, truly operating, which creates a situation where they don't have time to think about or even put into play a growth strategy that involves, going out and sourcing and analyzing and negotiating and doing due diligence and closing on target acquisitions. It's just that they don't have the time. What I've also found is most of my clients haven't done a very serious transaction before, you know, buying a company that, you know, let's just say is somewhat equal to their size is a big transaction. And, you know, it's so capacity and know-how is what I really am trying to deliver. Because you're right. There's just a lack of capacity to go out, and it basically closes off an entire growth. You know, if you look at a business, you can grow organically through effective sales strategies, or you can grow through inorganic growth through acquisitions. A lot of smaller businesses, which I define as, you know, somewhere in that 5 million in revenue up to 50, you know, they close off an entire growth strategy because of the capacity and know-how. And, you know, my passion and why I'm doing this is I want to see these smaller businesses grow into sustainable, nice, larger size companies. And I think an inorganic strategy is not for everybody, but there's a lot of companies that could benefit from it. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It makes me, you know, feel like, oh my gosh, no way. But let's talk about what some of the benefits are of growing through a merger or an acquisition for a smaller company.
Yeah. So every company is very unique in why a acquisition could make sense to them.
Okay.
But oftentimes I see, you know, some of my clients right now they're growing, they're executing an acquisition strategy for talent reasons, for example. So we have labor challenges in a lot of industries right now. Finding, retaining good talent is tough. So one of the strategies of acquiring a competitor or merging with a competitor is to acquire that talent to build capacity within the operations of the company. So labor is one benefit if that kind of fits the business model. The other thing I see oftentimes is, let's say these smaller businesses have a big customer and that big customer moves into a different geography and they've got a good relationship. You know, the business does a really good job for this bigger customer and the bigger customer would love to use them, but, you know, for whatever reason, maybe needs somebody, some operation near them in this new geography. Well, you know, you can do it organically if you want to set up a new shop, you know, in a new state, for example. But sometimes it can make sense to go into that market and acquire a similar company and be able to grow with your kind of big customer. So you see some geographical strategies. And then the other ones, you know, are more commonly talked about. You know, if you can go out and acquire a supplier, for example, you're able to, you know, improve some of your margins by owning, you know, your main supplier. And then the other one that's really relevant in a couple of industries I'm working with is, you know, technology is so rapidly being adopted and growing as a force for competitiveness for a lot of these smaller businesses. And you can, you know, yes, you can adopt and change processes and adopt technology within your own business. And that oftentimes it makes a lot of sense. But sometimes you can see buying a company that's already adopted said technology that would allow you to take advantage of what's already established and instead of doing it all in-house. So those are just a couple things that come off the top of my head as kind of some of the benefits of growing through acquisitions. And one more, if you don't mind, you know, especially in the small business space, and this is why I chose this market, on top of capacity challenges, is smaller businesses have a unique characteristic in that, making some acquisitions, assuming that you integrate and they're successful, can really enhance the value of the business. And, you know, I use it as an example, and it's probably over talked about, but it's an easy one to kind of understand. Let's say you have an HVAC company or a hardwood flooring company that does 10 million in sales and a million of EBITDA or cash flow. If we can go out, you know, that company probably is worth, let's say there's a 3 or 4 times multiple of cash flow, which is how these companies are typically valued. One of the ways they're valued. So let's say that company is worth $4 million. If we can go out and make a couple acquisitions and get them up to, let's say, $20 million of revenue and $2 million of EBITDA, that multiple expands from 4 to maybe even 6. So just from the sheer size of the business, that company becomes more valuable. And, you know, it's a function of, you know, there's a lot of buyers looking for, you know, $2 million cash flow businesses. They're deemed less risky just due to the nature of the size. You got to be somewhat professionalized operations and people, customer diversification, et cetera, that, you know, drives up that valuation. But that could be one of the reasons why a small business would want to look at growing through an acquisition is that value enhancement. If, for example, if they were prepping to sell in the next, 5-10 years, you know, it could be an effective value enhancer.
Interesting. Thanks for adding that. That's very interesting. One of the things that's interesting for me is that one I would have thought of. Some of the others that you mentioned make perfect sense to me, but I wouldn't necessarily have thought of them, you know, like for talent or geography. That was really interesting and it's a really valuable way to sort of expand your thinking about what could you do with, you know, if you were going to consider merging or acquiring a company. So it's very interesting. Now, what are some of the main challenges of making this decision and going down this road?
There's plenty. but I would say that, you know, some of the initial challenges of going down this path is, you know, and I do a lot of this work up front, is, you know, understanding why the company wants to do an acquisition. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into making it a reality. So we want to make sure that their purpose and their why is appropriate for this exact strategy.
Yeah.
And you'd be surprised on how many, why I'm saying it's a challenge, is sometimes the vision of these smaller businesses and even larger businesses for that matter, you'd be surprised how muddy the vision is of what does 3 to 5 years look like. And yeah, we don't have a crystal ball, but, you know, some directional clarity. So I spent a lot of time just refining strategy up front, because a merger and acquisition strategy should fit nicely into the overall growth strategy, not the other way around. So there's some of those challenges that forces, my clients are forced to clarify their vision. And that can be, you know, a challenging but rewarding and effective effort. And then the other pieces that are challenging is, I mean, sourcing the right deal is a big lift. It's a lot of effort. So assuming that you have clarity on the types of companies that you want that would be a good fit, you know, let's say the universe of, you know, HVAC companies in a certain geography is 100, or, you know, 50 to 100, you know, making contact, learning about their business, having them respond, and then getting to a place where, yeah, they are willing to sell. That process can be, you know, it can take some time. It takes relationship building. It takes picking up the phone, calling, introducing yourself, building relationships. And I think what I label that as a challenge, not in the effort that's associated with it. It's more about the patience level of the business owner, being patient that the deal may not happen in the first 6 months or even 12 months for that matter. The right deal might take years. And, you know, some of the challenges are associated with wanting to do it faster. And this type of transaction shouldn't be done. It's not something that should be just a light switch just turned on. You go make an acquisition. Oftentimes, you know, those types of things are the wrong fit. So I would say that outreach is challenging. And then, assuming you find a target, you know, there's always challenges in negotiating the right purchase price, the right deal structure, understanding the due diligence, where all the risks are. You know, those are not challenges that can't be overcome, but they're, you know, it's work to work through. And then the last one, which is I would say the hardest part. You do all of that work and now you have to integrate companies. So you got one, you got to mash, I hate using that word, but it is, you're putting two companies together.
Yeah.
You've got culture and you got people and it's emotional and you got systems that you're trying to, so there is a lot of stuff that has to go into that integration process. And the integration is where the money and the value is made. There's no value created during the due diligence and sourcing process. The value is created by effectively integrating the two companies into one. And, it's not something that can't be overcome. It just takes deliberate thought and focus to be able to address them.
It really does. You know, I wrote an article a while ago, it was something like mergers and acquisitions are earthquakes, because from my perspective, I see so many companies that don't go through a good enough process of that integration. So they end up making the whole experience much more difficult and stressful for everyone involved than would necessarily, you know, have to be if, you know, they were thinking about it from the moment they decided this was something they thought they were going to want to do and created a plan and a strategy for making sure that they were really folding these, you know, two entities together.
It's hard. And one of the functions of why it's hard is that, you know, going through the due diligence process and transacting, doing the actual mechanics of buying a company, is hard enough. You're dealing with banks and third-party providers, and you're dealing with a seller and trying to get information and trying to make sense of that information. You got timelines. So you may have initially promised the seller, we're going to try to close in 90 days or 120 days. You have all this pent-up pressure around just getting ink on the paper.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies where to your point, where they falter is they don't even work on the integration plan until they have the keys to the business. And that, in my opinion, it's too late.
Yeah, I agree.
So you need to be doing integration planning in addition to the due diligence.
Yeah.
And that's where the resources and the capacity and the help can be very valuable, because it's hard to do all that with one or two people, assuming you have that many people helping, you know, these smaller companies. So that integration is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally with you on that.
Hey friends, this is Jim Knight, former 21-year Hard Rock executive turned best-selling author and top 10 keynote speaker.
And I'm Brant Menswar, former frontman of Hollywood's most dangerous band turned top 10 motivational speaker and best-selling author.
We host the how-to podcast Thoughts That Rock, where we talk to rock stars, athletes, CEOs, astronauts, and even next-door neighbors who share their expertise and opinions. Together, we tackle the most interesting and challenging topics of today.
Whether you want to learn how to become more confident, how to deal with anxiety at work,
or how to write a hit song, or use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in life,
we've got hundreds of episodes to help amp up your life and move you forward.
Subscribe to Thoughts That Rock wherever you listen to podcasts and check out evergreenpodcast.com for more information.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, genxgrownup.com. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right. And let's talk about mindset and the role that it plays for the business owner when they're, you know, looking to grow through M&A.
Yeah, mindset is so, so important. And, you know, I think mindset could be a cliche kind of topic, but I love it because it's so applicable to going through the work to make an acquisition. It's work and it's risk. So it's not like just you're going to go out and hire a salesperson to drive growth by 10% next year. That's got its own challenges and risk, but here's, you might be buying, spending $2 or $3 million on a company to buy, the stakes are just a different level. And for someone to, courageously go down that path, their mindset needs to be, fixed in a certain way, but it's got to have an orientation. And I like to use the word growth mindset a lot, even though it can be overused, but it's, knowing why you're doing it will allow you to go through all of the challenges that are required to have a successful transaction. If the mindset is, I just want to be able to tell people I did an acquisition because I think it sounds, successful, or how hard can it be? This thing's just, I know the business is, this is should be a pretty simple thing, or, that kind of thinking will make the transaction harder to execute on. And in my opinion, a lower probability of success versus, I want to go make an acquisition because I want to serve my clients better. I want to provide employment opportunities to my current staff and move them into leadership positions. And I personally want to move out of the operations and more into a C-level, a CEO seat where I get to spend more time working on strategy instead of in the day-to-day. Those are all really good whys that, allow for that growth mindset to, kick into gear when all of the stuff feels like it's hard and you're doing it for the right reasons. And that's, that to me is what that effective mindset would, looks like with, acquisitive, small business leadership teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really, really valuable. So I'm a small business owner and they're thinking about, should I make this decision to grow through either, merger or an acquisition? What are the considerations that they should take into account when they're trying to just make the decision about whether they should go down this road?
Yeah, I think it's a good analysis on the status of their business and their industry and their competitiveness within their industry. For example, if you have a small business that has, we can use an example. So let's say we have a small business who desires to sell in the next 5 years. And their top three customers make up 70 or 80% of their revenue. You know, that might be a consideration. You know, can I go acquire a business to diversify my revenue? Because when I'm going to go look to sell this business, a buyer may look at the customer concentration as a huge risk and may not either be willing to buy me, or the value would be, you know, significantly lower than what I want.
Yeah.
So it's certain things that are, you know, certain makeups of the business as it relates to their industry would be, you know, a place to start. You know, is there, you know, and I usually start with, what are the challenges and weaknesses of your business? You know, we all have them, you know, no one's perfect. There's no perfect business out there, but let's start with, what are the things that are super frustrating? What are the things that don't seem to be working very well? What things are, do you feel vulnerable when you know, maybe it's keeping you up at night? That type of, those types of questions might inform you to go, well, does an acquisition make sense to fill some of these weaknesses, or to shore up some of our strengths, or to satisfy, eliminate some of our vulnerabilities? I think that process would be incredibly valuable as a place to start. And then if, you know, an acquisition could be a solution for some of that, then it might be a, you know, might be worth taking extra steps to learn more about what that could look like. But I would start with, you know, those weaknesses. And then conversely, it's, you know, knowing your competitive landscape. You know, are you, you know, is it, are you losing, you know, a good amount of business for certain reasons that, you know, you could fix through, you know, combining with another company, you know, whether that's pricing, which may suggest going, you know, into a vertical integration or acquisition and buying a supplier, or, you know, buying a company that offers a complimentary service. You know, I talk about this too. Is there a company you're constantly referring business to that you don't do, but your customers are constantly asking for? And, you know, is that another way to diversify what you offer your clients? So it's really, you know, it's an introspection of the leadership of that company in what their business, the status of their business, their health of their business, and what things could be, you know, strengthened. And you, once you do that analysis, you can go two ways. You can go, can we fix this internally? Yes, you could, you know, or is there, you know, there's multiple benefits of acquiring a company. We've talked about a couple of them, and maybe this would be another checkbox into the camp of maybe an acquisition makes a ton of sense.
Okay. Having said all of that, can you talk some about like what the capital environment looks like for a company that's, I mean, you know, this is such an interesting time to be talking about this, but, you know, if they want to finance it, what's going on out there?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you're right, right now is a tough time to talk about that because things have changed so fast.
Yeah.
But I would say that most of these acquisitions, you know, there's a few things that are kind of the big muscle movements that dictate capital. And, you know, a lot of these business owners don't want to sell equity, so they don't want to go raise equity to make these transactions happen, which a lot of times I agree with. Whether they don't want to or don't have access to equity capital, a lot of times they're looking to banks, looking to lenders to come in and leverage the transaction. And in that world, you know, you have two really kind of major options. You can go down a conventional loan route, or a lot of these transactions, if they're under, you know, call it 10 million or less, and that's transaction size. Okay. A lot of these are financed through SBA supported loan programs that, you know, banks participate in. And the reason why most of these will fall into an SBA camp is a lot of times these transactions, because they're valued on a multiple of cash flow. So take our HVAC company that's $1 million of EBITDA. If you were going to go buy that company for $4 million, you know, that company typically doesn't have the assets to back a $3.5 million loan. You know, it's, you're buying a stream of cash flow versus really buying specific assets like a piece of real estate. So because of the mechanisms of that, you end up with an acquisition that doesn't have enough collateral for a bank. And that's problematic for most banks. So most banks, with their, if they have a shortfall of collateral, they immediately go, okay, well, can SBA help us mitigate that risk? And depending on the bank you're talking to, oftentimes it can. And, that SBA loan process, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to look at SBA loan for these transactions. One of them being, you can get into a transaction up, you know, as little, and not to say this is always, and not, I don't always advise max leverage by any stretch, but the SBA loan program does allow up to 90% leverage or 10% equity into a transaction. So that's technically allowed. So you're a small business that may not have a ton of cash laying around because you've invested in your business. The SBA can allow you to buy a business with, you know, pretty minimal equity into the transaction. So that's one of the benefits. And another benefit of that program is, you know, you can buy a business on a 10-year amortization schedule. And that's pretty friendly from a cash flow perspective, you know, paying a loan over 10 years versus, you know, if you were going to go get a conventional loan, you know, it might be 5 years, you know, so double the loan payments, roughly speaking, which, you know, is coming out of the business and impairing the cash flow that's available for you as the owner. So that's the kind of the capital environment. Now, the environment itself, I think over the last 5 years there's been plenty of appetite with banks wanting to use SBA for these transactions. It's been a great time to be going to do this transaction. Now, going forward, as we enter a recession, could that change? Yeah, it probably will. And the change is to be ready for, if I'm a business owner looking to make an acquisition. I don't necessarily think a bank would, you know, they'll be a little bit more hesitant because they want to see how a recession plays out for this specific business. And one of the things that they typically will do is, you know, require more equity. So instead of 10%, it may be 20 or 30%. So that might be just something to think about as you prepare for going down this route, is just making sure you have additional liquidity and available equity, because banks during a recession may require a little bit more equity just to create a lower risk profile for them.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I could see that. I mean, that's sort of right now happening with everything, right? I mean, the cost of everything's going up. So why wouldn't this as well? Right. Yeah. You know, there's a cost of borrowing money. So I so appreciate this, Ryan. This has been so interesting. And I mean, I've learned so much about this whole concept, which means the listeners have as well. So thank you so much for joining me and sharing this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I think this is such a fun conversation, and it's all about growth and creating, you know, long-term sustainable businesses. So I just appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely. And will you share with the listeners how they can find you?
Sure. My website has all my contact information. It's www.gspiregroup.com. I'm also pretty active, or I'm trying to be as active as I can on Twitter and LinkedIn. Pretty accessible that way. And then my email is just Ryan, R-Y-A-N at gspiregroup.com. And that's how you can get hold of me.
Excellent. Well, as I said, thank you so much. And listeners, thank you. You are who we're doing this for. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Discover more episodes of this podcast and explore others at evergreenpodcast.com. As always, continue to prosper and be curious. And if you're looking to get your sales strategy headed in the right direction, pick up a copy of Succeed Without Selling on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Until we meet again on another episode of Accelerate Your Business Growth, goodbye and good day.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.